Chief Justice Annette King Flynn Ziegler, citing silence is commanded.
All right, please be seated. Good morning, everyone. This morning, we have on 20 AP 1271, James Sewell versus Racine Unified School District Board of Canvassers. Could I please have your appearances? Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Matt McNeil appears on behalf of Respondent Racine Unified School District Board of Canvassers. My entire Board of Canvassers is here in the courtroom today to hear the argument as well as other members of my family.
Good morning. All right, the lineup that I have this morning.
One more.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not mean to slight you in any way. The lineup that I have this morning starts out with 25 minutes for counsel for the petitioners, 20 minutes for Mr. O'Neill, 10 minutes for Mr. Moyler, and then back to 5 minutes in rebuttal. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Good. It's always a good start if we know what we're doing. So, all right, please proceed.
Good morning, Justices. Good morning, Mr. O'Neill and Mr. Moyler, and may it please the Court. My name is Samir Sadiq, and I represent the petitioners who challenged the outcome of a referendum that was decided by just 5 votes out of a total of 33,425 counted, and which concerns a $1 billion funding package to be distributed over a 30-year period. Petitioners at the circuit level asserted Wisconsin State Statute Section 7.54 in order to have ballots opened and errors in counting corrected, but the circuit declined, and eventually this court certified for review the question whether Section 7.54 provides the petitioners with the right that they claim. In support of their position, petitioners submit 3 main points today. Number one, our construction follows the plain reading, whereas the other side construes Section 7.54 out of effect. Number two, historical and other context supports our plain reading. And number three, there is nothing legally unreasonable or legally absurd about the plain reading.
Are you asking, just so I'm clear, under 7.54, for another recount, this time to be done by the circuit court?
Justice Roggensack, the petitioners are not asking for another recount.
Okay. What are you asking for?
The petitioners are asking for the courts to resort to the best evidence, which in this case are the ballots, in the face of an allegation that the ballots had been miscounted. In terms of a complete recount, which we have cited in our brief, there are a number of steps that the circuit court would not need to go through. Among those steps, there would be, reviewing the initials made by the inspectors, and other such steps. We would ask that the circuit court accept the finding of the Board of Canvassers as to the intent of the voter, which 9.01 sub 8 sub D requires. But as to any objective errors, such as those in counting, which we deem ministerial, that the court would correct any such errors made by the Board of Canvassers, where this case is decided by 5 votes.
Can you explain what that means? Because it sounds to me like you're asking for a recount. I don't know how else you look at the ballots without recounting the ballots. And so I want to know what exactly you're asking for and how we're out of 9.01 sub 11, which is the exclusive remedy for recount, which appears to be what you're asking for.
Justice Dallet, the recount is the term that it's used in the statutes. As it's described in 9.01 sub 1, and a lot of the procedures are outlined in sub B, we're not asking for the circuit to go through all of those steps. What we are ultimately asking for is for the circuit to accept the Board of Canvassers' determination on each ballot, whether it was a yes or a no, but ensure that under 9.01 sub 8 sub D, that should there be any errors, which 9.01 sub 8 sub D requires a court to set aside based on any findings of fact that are not substantially supported by evidence.
Right. How would the court do that without recounting the ballots? Recount is looking at each ballot. That is recount. I know that the language is used in 9.01 and not in 7.54, but I'm just, if you can explain what you mean by how that would work.
Yes, Justice Dellett. At page
8 of the blue brief.
I'm not, Justice. I'm looking for where we quote opposing counsel in their description of the recount process. This should be...
Well, I don't even... If you want to give that to me, that's fine. I don't want to cut you off. But, we've got a recount statute that gives all the procedures and processes. You're asking for some other type of procedure or process that you're not calling recount, but it really... appears to me to be akin to a recount, and I'm not understanding how the court would conduct this type of review without actually counting again all of the ballots, which appears to be what you're asking, to count
Justice,
them again.
Excuse me.
Yeah, no,
yes,
go ahead.
No, Justice Dellett, that's correct, that the courts are going to end up, or the circuit court in this case would end up recounting ballots, literally speaking. But I just want to clarify that that recount is not... the same procedures outlined in 9.01 sub A, sub...
The recount that isn't a recount.
No, Justice Dellett. It doesn't call for review a number of the steps that the Board of Canvassers must take in performing its recount.
Right. You want to avoid the steps the Board of Canvassers take in 9.01 and call it a different kind of recount that fits under 7.54.
I think, Justice Dellett, the court would have the discretion in conducting an inquiry into the ballots as it deems appropriate based on the allegations made.
Okay.
Yes.
That and not satisfied with that, would then the Court of Appeals be opening the ballots as well? Because 7.54 just talks about court. So how would that get cabined?
No, Justice Dellett. We think that there is a principal distinction, first of all, in the type of errors that would be corrected by a circuit, the nature of looking at the factual determinations and the ultimate counting of the ballots is different than a matter of law, which under Chapter 9, those two things are to be treated separately. We do think that a Court of Appeals, of course, as it did in Roth and other cases in the past, would have to look at issues of law, as to whether a certain mark might fall under 7.50 sub 4 sub C or something like that. But not under whether the ballot, which clearly has a mark for yes, would have been accidentally counted for no or vice versa.
So 7.54 does not apply when it says court. You're reading that to say circuit court.
Yes.
Open court, so that's not in front of the Court of Appeals and not in front of the Supreme Court.
Yes, Justice Dellett, that's correct. 7.54's review of the ballots would only the right vested in the petitioners to have the ballots opened would only be at the circuit court level.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, I understand that in your petition for review, as you state in your brief, and specifically I'm looking at the section entitled Standard of Review, the issue accepted for review in this court solely regards the construction and application of 7.54 of the statutes. Is that correct?
Yes, Justice Bradley.
In fact, in your introductory comments here, you said, number one, the plain reading of 7.54, number two, the historical support of 7.54, and number three, nothing precludes it. Is it your contention that the ballots should be open, reviewed in an open session of the circuit court
pursuant to 7.54. Is that what we're here about?
Yes, Justice Bradley. We're asking that the Circuit Court review the ballots to confirm the counting of the Board of Canvassers, which, of course, such request is based on the allegation that there was a miscounting of the ballots.
So I don't understand why this has to be done. From your argument, it sounds like it is a not giving, saying that the facts here, as found, are not supported by substantial evidence under 8D of
9.01 sub 8 sub D. Yes, Your Honor.
That's right. But that's not the way you've stated the issue in your petition for review. That's not the way you stated the issue in your brief several times. And that's not the way that you've stated the issue at the beginning of your comments here today. The way that you've stated the issue is whether or not you're entitled to open review of the ballots. Because the law vested Sewell with the right to have the ballots opened and reviewed in an open session of the Circuit Court. And he has yet to have that right respected. That's how you have presented the case in writing and thus far orally. So how does, are you relying on 901 sub 8D?
Your Honor, we think that 7.54 would apply through the mechanism of Chapter 9. I think Justice Dallet had mentioned that the exclusive judicial remedy is found in 9.01 sub 11 as being the Chapter 9 mechanism of reviewing an election contest. Now, whether it is or it isn't, we haven't delved into that too deeply. I have some personal thoughts on that, but I don't think it would matter in this case. I think 7.54 would apply perfectly. It would complement Chapter 9's review process.
Let me make sure I understand then your argument. Is your argument before this court today that Sewell has the right to have ballots opened and reviewed in an open session of the Circuit Court pursuant to 7.54. Is that what this case is all about?
Yes, Justice Bradley.
If that's your argument, is part of your argument that the Circuit Court would recount under 9.018D?
We think that under 9.018D, the Circuit Court must set aside any determinations that are not supported by substantial evidence, the determinations by the Board of Canvassers. And we would think that a ballot that clearly has yes marked off on it, or no marked off on it, can't be counted for the other side, if you will. And that is, of course, the crux of what this review is asking for the court to have done, and for this court to ultimately have ordered, or at least recognize that under 7.54 that right exists, and then the Circuit Court can make its inquiry thereafter.
What language of the statutes, 9.01 and 7.54, dictate the result that you wish to achieve?
I'm sorry, Chief Justice Ziegler, I missed you on that last couple words.
I'm looking for the actual language of the statutes that you rely on for your interpretation. What is it that tells us this is the plain meaning and you win?
Sure. 7.54, and I will maybe initially just mention that I don't think either side has any disagreement as to the second sentence in 7.54, that the ballots are to be opened during an open session and that, you know, that they must be viewed in front of the person that has custody of them. As for the first sentence in 7.54, I also think that myself and the respondents agree on a lot of it, which is that this is a contested election, that these are contesting parties, and that they have a right to have the ballots opened and to have errors corrected. Where we begin to diverge is when it gets on to its application to the Board of Canvassers or court. The
word or is something that interests me, so.
Yes, Chief Justice Ziegler, we think that the word or in this, through the context, is fairly clear that it's the inclusive use of the or. That is, according to the Wisconsin Drafting Manual, the default meaning, unless the context is very clear otherwise.
Why didn't they use and then?
Justice Kurofsky, we think that if they had used and, it would essentially make the statute very ambiguous as to whether a Board of Canvassers and court would need to open simultaneously the ballots and review them. And that, of course, would be problematic. I think we analogize this situation to the statutes where it's stated that a circuit court commissioner or circuit court judge shall set the scheduling order. And, of course, if and had been used there, too, it might be read to mean that both must at the same time. It seems fairly clear also that if a circuit court commissioner were to set a schedule, that the circuit court judge could also set a schedule.
Counsel, I wanted to return to maybe some of the earlier questions and just make sure I understand the nature of your claim as well. Obviously, under 9.01 8D, there is, you could challenge something, findings of fact, if they're not supported by substantial evidence. I didn't read in your brief any, that I recall, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall reading anything about any specific findings from the Board of Canvassers. We're developing an argument that specific findings were not supported by substantial evidence because of X, Y, or Z that was presented to the Board of Canvassers. What I understood you to be saying is that regardless almost of what happened there, that 7.54 gives you an opportunity to, and a right, even a positive determined legal right to bring ballots into court and to check and maybe identify subsequent, errors in some way or whatever, right, that you would want to be set aside or draw down or something like that. In other words, I didn't read you to be arguing that this is a substantial evidence challenge under this. And even your answers earlier, what I heard you to be saying, again, I just want to make sure I'm understanding your argument, is that maybe if we pulled the ballots in, or if the trial court pulls ballots in, counts them in the specific wards you're wanting to be counted, that maybe then they'd be set aside. But you didn't make any specific arguments that I saw about errors at the Board of Canvassers. For the recount.
I'm sorry, Justice Hagedorn, just to clarify the question, is the question about whether we think there are specific errors pointed out in the record as to the Board of Canvassers, or is it as to clarification of why we bring up today 9.01 sub 8 sub D?
I guess I'm clarifying the nature of the legal argument you're bringing to us, because there are two different arguments. There's an argument that that there isn't substantial evidence to support findings that happened below. That's one kind of argument. You didn't frame it that way. I didn't recall you arguing that way. I understand that might be there to some degree. But what I see you arguing is really something quite separate, is that even regardless of whether there's errors below, you have a right under 7.54 to have specific ballots that you would request counted in the trial court.
Right. Just with one caveat, Justice Hagedorn, I think that, there has to be some legitimate dispute. I guess a contested election assumes that, the Court of Appeals in Oconto talked about this, that if there is no chance or no likelihood of overturning the election, then it's essentially harmless error. They didn't use the word harmless errors, but that's, of course, sort of an underlying premise of being able to contest an election, is to have some legal change in position. I'm not going to just broadly say that it's overturning the election, because I suppose there could be other benefits from a certain vote count, but I suppose just wanted to clarify that point.
Well, let's follow that train of thought then. So you're not arguing you have an absolute right to have votes counted in circuit court, Are you saying now that there need to be some legitimate challenge of some sort, some particular errors below that would need to have been alleged or substantiated in some way?
No, I think what I'm saying is that there are preconditions implied both through 5.01 sub 1, which would have the court read this statute and other statutes that are fallen between chapters 5 through 12 so as to effectuate the will of the elector. And I suppose if the challenge doesn't actually overturn an election or have any effect on a legal position of any party, it would be something that the court would justly say, I'm not reviewing these.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Is it, just to make sure again, am I right in reading you to not be arguing that that particular findings by the Board of Canvassers are not supported by substantial evidence?
We think that the type of error that we're seeking to be corrected would on its face possibly could not be supported by substantial findings of the canvassers. So whether we use 9.01 sub 8 sub D or this court's decision in Roth so as to say, any marking made in, the oval next to the person's name or the candidate's name is as a matter of law a vote for that person, it really wouldn't matter because that would be determinative. And looking at the ballots would, of course, confirm that.
Hmm. Go ahead.
So the only precondition you're saying is that it's a close election? Because if you're not pointing to specific errors, what are you pointing to? You're just saying, well, because this was within five votes, the decision was in five, we have a right to have it recounted by the circuit court pursuant to 7.54. Is that what you're arguing?
No, Justice Dallet. I will say one thing to that point, which is there might be some weight given to the fact that it's a close election. I'm not saying that would be determinative by any means.
But if you're not pointing to errors, because I hear you saying you're not pointing to specific errors, you're just saying we want it recounted, but why does it get recounted? I'm still having a hard time understanding what needs to, because you're not saying you always have this right under 7.54, so what are the conditions under which you think someone has the right under 7.54?
Sure. So, Justice Dallet, we first of all would say that the petitioners, and this is in the record, were participants in the recount, which was a six-day-long process. Throughout that process, they thought that there was a miscounting, and that was alleged in the complaint, paragraphs 39 through 50.
Did they bring those specific errors to the attention of the BOC during the recount?
Justice Rogensack, I'm not certain as to whether there were specific errors lodged with the BOC on a request to recount any particular. I don't know that.
Why weren't there? Why wouldn't that have been the place to address these issues instead of what you're asking for now? Or why weren't those arguments preserved at that time?
Sure, Justice Kurofsky. At the circuit court level, the court made its decision on the assumption that 7.54 vested no right. And the issue...
I'm not asking about what happened in the circuit court. Go back to the recount in front of the Board of Canvassers. Justice Rogensack just asked you, did anyone contest at that time, argue at that time that the Board of Canvassers was doing something wrong? What I heard you say to her question was no. And I'm asking you, why not?
I'm sorry. Actually, Justice Kurofsky, I'm sorry, but I don't know whether that was lodged. That's not something that I just know off the top of my head right now. I apologize.
But if there was an error made, it would be in the record for us to find, correct? So if there was an objection to the way the pluses and the minuses were counted here for yeses and noes, if there was an objection made, it would be in the record and we could find it, right?
Justice Rogensack, I can't say that it would be in the record because that would be relying on the notes and the minutes by the BOC. And of course, this is why I had begun by talking about the circuit court's assumption when it was deciding the case, which is that 7.54 provides no right. We never got to the question of, what basis there is. Were there any objections that were lodged that aren't reflected in the minutes or anything of that sort? Instead, the circuit court decided that, there was no basis. First of all, the circuit court didn't really address 7.54, but even beside that, the circuit court thought that as a matter of evidence, based on the notes and the minutes, and this is at Record 74, page 20, where the circuit court acknowledges that there may have been an error in counting, but based on what I see in front of me, there is nothing there.
Could you respond to the respondent's argument that you're cherry-picking certain ballots? In other words, on page 8 of your brief, you list, and I understand it's a summary of what was in your complaint, you specify certain ballots and certain wards that were allegedly subjected to incorrect tallying or the drawdowns were done improperly. If that's the case, how do you respond to the respondent's argument then that, in fact, the court would have to look at all, I think there were over 30,000 ballots. If you're alleging that that there was incorrect tallying by the Board of Canvassers, then how would the court just isolate its review to those ballots? Wouldn't it have to look at all the ballots?
Sure. Justice Bradley, we would begin first by saying that Chapter 9 doesn't allow anyone that is not an aggrieved party, that essentially doesn't have standing to contest an election. The second point is that the wards that are requested for review in paragraphs, which is a part of the complaint, paragraph 39 through 50, are based on the petitioner's, both petitioner's involvement in the recount as observers, the counsel, who at page 20 of the record at 74 in open court stated that, the errors also seem to be apparent from the BOC's own notes and minutes and such. First of all, yes, it is correct that we think that only these wards need to be open. And in terms of any change in position that might result for any other individual that voted yes, Roth 1 takes care of that. In Roth 1, Judge Dykeman decided that for the Court of Appeals that should there be a change in position of an individual that's affected, they may be allowed to intervene. And so should somebody want to contest other wards because they also feel there's a miscounting, that would be allowed.
Thank you, counsel.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Justices. May it please the Court. I'll start with an answer to an issue that came up late, and that was whether there were any times during the recount itself where the petitioners brought up, hey, this result doesn't look wrong. And the answer is yes, it did occur. It is in the record. It's not every paragraph 39 through 50, but at various points during the recount that did happen, and the response of the Board of Canvassers was to have the recount and retally. And when they continued to question the result, the response was to recount and retally. That's in the affidavit of Elizabeth Tobias, who was the chair of the Board of Canvassers. That's record number 48. It's also in record number 33. There's a note on one of the individual counting tables where one of the tabulators said, sorted and counted in front of observers multiple times with multiple tabulators. So I can't say that it happened in every instance. I think they did a little post-recount math and tried to figure out where this issue popped up and listed all those in their complaint. But the issue was raised during the recount, and it was reacted to. And what that is part of is the recount here was performed to the letter with what the legislature has demanded in 9.01 and laid out in 9.01 sub B, sub 1, and then all the way through subs 1 through 11. And
counsel,
that process.
If there was an objection on the record that your addition came, or the Board of Canvassers' addition came up with two more yes votes and two fewer no votes in a particular ward, that objection was made. How else does a circuit court review it now, because we've been at the circuit court? How else should the circuit court review it except to look under 901-8D and see whether that recount by the BOC is supported by substantial evidence, except by looking at the votes?
So what the circuit court did here, and the circuit court was dead right. The circuit court said, yeah, you've raised this issue that here's the original results. They show 100 yes, 100 no. There were two drawdown no's, two drawdown yeses, and the results weren't 98-98. So therefore, there's a problem. And the circuit court recognized that is an incorrect understanding of how a recount works, because you don't start with the election day and just reduce it by the drawdowns. There are all sorts of other things that impact what the count is. So it did not raise an inference.
Okay. I understand that that's an argument the circuit court seemed to take. I didn't think that was the argument of petitioners. I think they said the new numbers, the recount numbers in, say, Ward 39, are wrong because in the recount itself, they made errors, and you just said yes, they did object to them, and the BOC looked at them and determined that their BOC's count was right, not the objector's count, okay? All of that may be totally true, but now the circuit court is to look at it, and they have to, the procedures they are to use are in Chapter 901, correct? And they look at 8D, and 8D says you don't accept factual determinations that are not supported by substantial evidence. Well, you know, 2 plus 2 is going to be 4 all day for me. So if it's just math, I don't know how the circuit court checks the math without looking at the ballots.
And let me back up, Justice, and be clear. The only basis that they allege to support the claim that there was a miscount,
right,
because the total didn't add up to what they expected if you took the original minus the drawdowns. That was the sum and substance of what they were claiming.
Okay.
And the circuit court recognized that does not raise any issue that requires the circuit court to dig into ballots.
I agree. I'm
now,
just hearing a different argument.
Let me give you an example. Okay. If, in fact, the complaint was that a set of tabulators took a ward, went into a back room and counted it, and we don't think it was accurate. We never saw it. In that circumstance, if you came to the circuit court and you said under 9.01, I challenged that result, I wasn't able to see it. The circuit court, because the procedure was wrong and because there wouldn't be substantial evidence to say, hey, this was counted in public, could absolutely open up that ballot bag and take a look at those ballots. That's not at all what we have here. And that's not what they're arguing. They're arguing is that 7.54 provides them an absolute right to have all ballots open and all errors of the inspectors, whether in counting or failing to count a vote, corrected by the circuit court on appeal from a 9.01 recount. And it's important when you look at it to look at the text of 7.54, the context of 7.54, and the history of 7.54 to see if that supports that argument. And it doesn't. The text of 7.54 does not come out and give any instructions to a circuit court on appeal from a recount, which is a self-contained appeal procedure within 9.01, to do anything. It doesn't reference it at all. And when you look at the history, it becomes clear where this came from. So prior to 1905, this language wasn't in the statutes about contested elections and opening ballots. It didn't exist. And at that time, prior to 1905, a loser of an election could do one of two things. You could go to court under quo warranto and seek to oust a person from office that way, or you could bring a recount. And at that time, there were recounts in a city or county. It would go to the inspectors. At a county level, it would go to the Board of Canvassers. And if you were alleging illegality, it would go to a court. And so at the time, 1905, you could go either to a court or to a Board of Canvassers. In 1905, they passed a law that amended the ballot security provision. This was back in Chapter 5, Section 80 at the time. And prior to that time, everything but the defective ballots was destroyed on election night. Seems crazy now, but that was the law. And the legislature in 1905 said, no, if there's any contest of the election, you're going to preserve all ballots, both defective and counted. And then they put in place that elaborate system of sealing with wax and tying the wires and all that crazy stuff, and required they be burned in the presence of two citizens of integrity appointed by a judge. So very austere provisions. And then they added the sentences that said in all contested elections, The contesting parties have the right to have all ballots opened and any errors of the inspectors, in counting or not counting, corrected. And that always had to be done either in open court or in open session of the board. And the reason for the or language in 1905 is there were two alternative methods to do it. And so the statute simply directed that if you're in front of a board of canvassers, it's the board of canvassers that corrects those errors, and they have to do it in open session. If you go quo warranto, or you're suing under the provision at the time that allowed you to go to court on allegations of illegality, it would be the court doing that. And that's how the case law from back in the early 1900s indicates. When it was a quo warranto action circuit court, the circuit court did the recount. Whatever was necessary to correct errors, including recounting ballots, circuit court did it. When you went before a board of canvassers, the board of canvassers did it. And Wigand, the case they cite to support them, actually supports the exact opposite.
Before we get to Wigand, under what circumstances would a court ever open ballots under 7.54 under your construction of the statute? Because as I understand your argument, you're suggesting that this or the court language is sort of left over from what the statutes used to read and what they used to provide, and now everything changed and the Board of Canvassers are the exclusive or 901 sub 11 provides the exclusive remedy, even though it doesn't say that for referenda. But how do we give effect is the bottom line. How do we give effect
sure.
to 7.54 sure. language regarding
and
the court?
It's the perfect question, because for 80 years there was no question, because it could be either a court or it could be a court of canvassers. And in 1983 is when they did away with the section preserving common law rights of candidates and said this is exclusive. And so your question is, well, what then? In 1983, does this language have no meaning? And if it doesn't have meaning, let's give it some meaning. And the answer is, I can't say for certain when a situation would arise now where you'd end up in court. I could hypothesize of some situation, because recall, quo warranto still exists as a remedy, but just not to correct errors on election day. It corrects things in the administration of an election. But I will say, if you had a challenge based upon a misprinting of a ballot, happened in Outagamie County last year, and the machine wouldn't count it correctly, and you brought a quo warranto and said, I'm not challenging anything on election day. I'm saying prior to the administration of the election, there was a defect with the ballot, and therefore they weren't counted correctly. Because the ballot itself was, you could possibly there have a court do it. But it may well be that that or court decided in the contest language is just an appendage that no longer has much vitality, if any.
Are you asking the court to declare it a nullity?
I'm not asking the court to declare it a nullity, but I'm certainly saying this court does not have the authority to breathe new meaning to a statute. I mean, there is good and solid.
I agree with you there.
What's that?
I agree with you there. We have to give it the meaning it had when it was enacted, right?
Here, there's a quote from Justice Gorsuch in a recent case, New Prime, Inc., and what he said in that case was, if judges could freely invest old statutory terms with new meanings, we would risk amending legislation outside the single, finely wrought, and exhaustively considered procedure the Constitution commands. And that is essentially what this court would be doing if it said, we know what it meant for 80 years, but now that you've taken out that option to go to court, we're going to say that it transposes on that process that's very carefully set forth in 9.01, 6, 7, and 8, a new process, a new obligation, what they claim to be an absolute right to force the circuit court to do something it didn't have to do for 80 years.
If you look at the procedures in Chapter 9, specifically 9.01, sub 8, sub D, that tells what the circuit court does when the matter is before the circuit court, which is the most recent circumstance in this case, correct?
Correct.
I continue to have difficulties understanding a claim that is just mathematical error, which is what is argued on the other side, can be determined without looking at the ballots to see who counted correct. And it's wards 39 through 50, not all of the wards are to be looked at according to what was argued here today. So if there's a mathematical error and they're saying, yep, the BOC just didn't add correctly, how does the court determine whether that claim is right or wrong without looking at the ballots?
So just raising an issue saying they didn't count right,
Okay.
In my opinion, it doesn't put an obligation on the circuit court to do anything because it's not credible, and it doesn't raise an inference that requires the court to look at the evidence. But if you assumed it did, and here, it's paragraphs 39 through 50 of their complaint. Make no mistake, it covers 32 different wards, 12 different counting units, over 10,000 ballots.
Okay.
It is a large claim of miscounting based upon a faulty premise. But if you took it seriously and you said, okay, what then? Then you look at the record, and what the record shows is that every time they raised this during the proceeding before the fact-finding body, the Board of Canvassers, they said, count it again, count it again, count it again. And that is evidence that the count is correct. Mm-hmm. And there is no alternative inference that's valid when one understands how a recount goes. It's not draw down, change numbers. It's step 1 through 11. And if you look at the DeBrow case, for example, they talk about how these things change. The machine doesn't read some faint marks on a ballot. It doesn't read what somebody circles
the
arrow. I agree
with you. The machine count is not what we look at. That's not what we look at. And if that really is the only argument that was made, I don't think that that's an argument that comes within the confines of the statute. I guess what I'm hearing is that they had a right to have these counted by the court, okay? And they think it's an absolute right. For me, it's almost a timing kind of right. I don't think court deciding the contest means nothing in 9.74. I have a hard time with that. But I also don't think it means exactly the same thing as the court has to do another recount with all of the ballots in open court. And my problem is the court is deciding the contest once it gets to the circuit court, right? That's what happens. And the circuit court here decided that the VOC's numbers were the correct numbers, and that was it. But I don't know, when there's simply a math problem, how a court can do that without looking at the ballots. And you say, well, they did it twice, so therefore the VOC is correct. You know, and maybe that's where I'll end up. But to me, math is one of those things that if it's done incorrectly, then it's not supported by substantial evidence in the record under sub D. And that's what's personally bothering me. I think now we're before the court, and I want the court to follow the procedures in 9.01. I think that's what's required.
But yeah, I agree with that.
You see what's bothering me?
Yes, I do.
Be most appreciative.
As I see your issue, it's with how does one approach an issue like this within the confines of 9.01?
Exactly.
Because
exactly.
If, in fact, a credible allegation had been made that the Board of Canvassers counted Ward 13 in Racine incorrectly,
right,
and they had evidence that raised a substantial inference or a real inference that that count was wrong, that
right,
the numbers were simply wrong, then I do believe a court would have the authority under Section 9.01 in its decision to summarily hear and determine in some fashion and to say, I'm going to take access of the ballots, and I'm going to do it in open court, and I'm going to look through and make sure it's correct.
Okay.
But they did not raise a legitimate challenge, and it was responded to appropriately by the board that conducted the recount to say you can't simply saying the recount wasn't the same as original election day minus the drawdowns is an incorrect assumption that it's meaningful at
all. So that's the way they raised the challenge during the recount. They said the original numbers were 50 and they should have been then a subtraction of 2, an addition of 2 to the original numbers.
Yeah. And it went both ways. Just so you know, this happened on both sides. So at certain points, we would finish counting a particular counting unit, and the results were not exactly original.
Okay.
And sometimes it was the petitioners that said, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't look right. And the Board of Canvassers would say, count it again, stack them again. We brought in new tabulators sometimes. Other times it happened on the yes side, where the yeses seemed to have less than they should have on that straight mathematical line. And we did the same thing.
But
and we stopped the process.
What
we told
was
people.
The objection on the yes side? Did they
same
say,
thing.
Did they start with the initial
yes.
count too?
Yeah, they said that this raises a question for us about whether it's correct, and we said, fine, we'll retally again. We will redo our stacks. We'll check them to make sure it's all no's in one stack and all yeses in the other. And that's how the process is designed by the legislature to do. And let me say this, because my time is running short. Their position is not that the court made an error under 9.01 in applying its recount or its appeal process. Their position is 7.54 provides a party in a recount an absolute right to have the circuit court open any ballots and recount any ballots upon any claim they make. And if that were in fact, can I finish? Oh, I'm not on red yet.
Yep.
If that in fact were the case, then I'm going to finish. If that in fact were the case, anybody who lost a recount would say, I don't agree with the math. I want another count. And if in fact that was done even here, just 10,000, that recount and the circuit court process, whether it did it itself or tried to do it by remand, would have taken weeks or months. If you extrapolate to a larger
so
election...
Now, I hate to interrupt you, but your time is winding down, and I want to ask you this question.
Yes, Justice.
I want to know what's your best argument? Is your best argument under 901 sub-11? Is your best argument the or language in 7.54? Is your best argument the inspector's distinction that you pointed out?
The best argument is that the history, when one looks at the history of 7.54, it is apparent that the language or court deciding the contest was included solely because at that time and for the ensuing 80 years, a recount could be conducted either by a board of canvassers or by a court. And the legislature was saying and telling people when saving the ballots why they were saving them, that those people had an absolute right to have the ballots open and errors corrected. And when the legislature in 1983 decided 9.01 is exclusive, and took away that secondary quo warranto option for candidates, it did not infuse that language or court deciding the contest with new meaning, compelling a circuit court in a very circumscribed appellate process that's supposed to be summarily affirmed and determined every time that on pure demand of the losing party, you got to open and count and count and count again.
But in response to Justice Rogenczak's question, I heard, and tell me if I misheard you, I heard you to say that the court would have the authority to take possession of the ballots in open court if the petitioners had brought forward credible evidence that there was some error in the process with respect to counting or some other error, then the court could, under 7.54, open the ballots and conduct its own review. Is that what you're saying?
I wouldn't actually say the court would be going under 7.54. I would say it's within the court's discretion under 9.01, sub 6, sub 7, sub... To do what was necessary to resolve legitimate challenges. The first point, once a statutory appeal is filed under 9.01 sub 6, is for the circuit court to take possession of the ballots or to order them to be kept in one place by the person with custody. So they've got the election materials. And what you often see is there's a fight about specific ballots, there's a fight about markings, there's a fight about some category. And what the circuit court can do within its discretion, can I finish?
Yes.
Can do within its discretion to resolve those challenges is have access to those materials. So it's absolutely within the discretion, but there was no challenge here that was raised that gave any need to do that, and certainly not to recount 10,000 ballots.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices, may it please the Court. My name is Christopher Moyler. I represent the Yes for Our Children Committee and its President, Chelsea Powell. I want to pick up right away on this discussion that we were just having, about the alleged incorrect tallies from the wards. And Mr. O'Neill did point out, and I want to expand on it, that both sides did in that room that day have those challenge, have that issue of, well, there were a number of drawdowns, say, and comparing that to the election night totals, not what we expected when the tally came through. We challenged it sometimes. The petitioners challenged it sometimes. And what happened each time, Mr. O'Neill is correct, is that it got counted again and counted again. The board did allow and did grant those requests to do it again and again. You know, at some point, somebody may not be satisfied, but they've gone through that process. And it was a very transparent process. This was all done out in the open. Everybody could see what the canvassers were doing, what the tabulators were doing. It was broadcast on Facebook Live. This was all done out in public very, very clearly. So what we have here is a very transparent process, and under 9.01, those findings are entitled to deference.
Counsel, does your construction of 7.54 give any effect to the language that references the court opening ballots in open court?
Yes, I think it does, and we certainly agree with the Board of Canvassers' analysis of this, but you can go through the statute itself and, excuse me, you know, we would say that the or is disjunctive, first of all. I would also say that, you know, the section 7.54 focuses on errors of the inspectors, not of the Board of Canvassers. Okay, so chapter 7 addresses largely the work of the inspectors, and inspectors are on election day, okay? And the clear language of section 7.54 does say that they have the right to have all errors of the inspectors.
Right, but the statutes require, as I understand it, the statutes require the Board of Canvassers to do the recount when the appropriate factors are met. But 7.54, the argument is, gives the right to contesting parties to have the ballots reviewed in open court. And as I understand Mr. O'Neill's argument, he's saying, well, it's kind of a vestige of the way things used to be and not the way things are after the election statutes were revamped. So how do we give any effect to 7.54 with respect to court? Or can't we? Is it a nullity?
I wouldn't say it's a nullity because, again, you know, like Mr. O'Neill, I agree with Mr. O'Neill's position on this, that we have, you know, there are potential where a court might be called upon to open a ballot. There is the quo warranto situation where it addresses, you know, say something that happened before the election and it affects a certain number of ballots. The court may be called upon to open them in that particular case, but not errors of the Board of Canvassers. That's the point. It focuses, you know, the section 7.54 focuses on errors of the inspectors.
What if, and Mr. O'Neill gave an example earlier, what if the Board of Canvassers did the recount in a closed room? What if you said that it was on Facebook Live and it was very transparent, it was all done open in public? What if it were done in a closed room? Would that then be a basis for a court to look at those ballots?
Yes, then I think it would be, because if it's not done in public as required, remember, when you go under Section 9.01, the circuit court sits in review, and there are three categories of what is reviewed: legal issues, process issues, and fact issues. That would be an issue of process, right? Because it wasn't done out in the open. How can the public have confidence if it's done in a back room by itself? So, yes, in that situation, they would have to put, you know, there would be a couple of options, actually. They may not need to, the court itself may not need to. They may, you know, there may be an order that, hey, you know, you have to send it back, and we have to charter a new board of canvassers because these guys don't know how to do it right. So I wouldn't even concede that the court has to, but that would certainly be an error that needs to be corrected.
So are you finished?
Thank you.
So I heard Mr. Sadiq propose that there are preconditions to being able to have a matter heard in court, and those are implied by 5.01, I believe. I heard counsel for the respondents, RUSD, say there are preconditions to having a matter heard in court, and those are that there is a credible claim and that there is evidence to support the credible claim. And I'm not sure, other than what you just said to Justice Kurowski, what your, if any, preconditions are to having a matter heard in court. I think you said if something is not done in public, but is there anything else?
Well, the preconditions are listed in the statute, Section 9.01, and that gives specific standards of review to a circuit court for legal issues, procedural issues, and fact issues. What we have here...
So legal, procedural, and factual issues need to be alleged. Otherwise, there is no right to have a court conduct, for example, an open recount.
Correct. There are standards already in the statute on this particular issue. So when petitioner...
Well, in other words, you'd have to allege 9.01 was violated, this was held private.
Right. And in the statute also requires that when petitioners or anyone comes to court alleging defects, they have to allege it with specificity in their complaint. So they have to say, this fact was found incorrectly, and here's why. Now, the reason that they've given...
So notice pleading doesn't apply here.
No, you initially file a notice of appeal, and then the statute very specifically says you have to list out in detail, because this is a summary process. It's intended to be a quicker process because, while this was a referendum, oftentimes there are candidates waiting to take office. The public has a right to have their folks in office or has a right to these decisions. So the process is very laid out, very specific, and is supposed to go, it's supposed to be a summary proceeding in the circuit court based on what is alleged or what is challenged. Now here, again, they've simply alleged that by comparing the drawdowns with the election night totals, the board got it wrong. But let's remember, while it's a big deal in the recount room that day when, say, the expectation isn't met for the count, based on the drawdowns, it's a big deal, it's a jolt to the parties, but it doesn't really, it doesn't affect the Board of Canvassers' work. The Board of Canvassers has a number of specific steps that they have to undertake to complete the recount. It doesn't, so when there's a comparison to, the reason given, a comparison of drawdowns to election night isn't a reason under the statute. You have to bring more. And there is substantial evidence here that supports these findings. It was done multiple times. That is in the record. That the count was performed multiple times. So you have that. You have that it was done in public. The process was followed here, and it was followed multiple times. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that they've brought to court here that would suggest that a court needs to count again.
Counsel, I want to return the focus to 7.54. It's uncontested that the matters, the ballots, were reviewed in open before the Board of Canvassers. It's my understanding that your opposing counsel interprets 7.54 as, in addition to that, they have the right to have it done in open court under 7.54. What's your best argument in response to that assertion?
Well, they are asserting an absolute right, and that simply doesn't comport with both the plain language of the statute or, any... I'm sorry, my time's up. May I finish?
Finish the answer.
It doesn't comport... The remedy that they seek would totally conflict with the specific statute requirements laid out in Section 9.01. So not only does it not comport with the plain language, but it doesn't... It conflicts with the specifics of Section 9.01.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Sadiq.
Good
Justice Dallet, I was referring to pages 47 to 49 in our brief. I want to start off by addressing the issue of credible error. This is important. This court, or the circuit court, I should say, decided the matter without, under the assumption that 7.54 provided no right. Had it decided that it wouldn't open up the ballots because there was no credible error, that would be a completely one that's at bar. The next is that there are safeguards in this system. 9.01 sub 6 sub A provides the court the authority to assess a surety that would be required for any contesting party to pay for any matter that they're asking the court to review through this process, which, of course, we agree that Chapter 9 in this case was the process utilized. 7.54's guarantee is that the best evidence is to be consulted, essentially. And the history of it supports that. And this is critical. 1983 WIS Act 183 is the act that creates Chapter 9. 1983 WIS Act 484, which followed WIS Act 183, is what reenacted 7.54. 7.54 is no dead letter.
Did sub 11 come at that same time, though?
Justice Dallet,
exclusive, right?
Sub 11 came with 1983 WIS Act 183, just to be clear, which preceded 484, through which 7.54 was reenacted.
When you say it was reenacted, wasn't it just moved?
No, there
it was already there. It was 5 point whatever, and it became 7.54.
It started at 6.60 sub 4 in 1965 through WIS Act 666. It became 7.23 sub 2, and then it went to 7.54. But there were some changes.
Board of Canvassers was the word that was added.
Board of Canvassers was added. The change also was that the court, it used to say the court or body trying such contest, and that was flipped to saying the Board of Canvassers or court deciding the contest, which also goes to the point of what does deciding the contest mean? Does it mean that it's just as to the Board of Canvassers or to the court? You see that those two words were interchanged, and this court has decided in Borick v. Cranberry Marsh that where the changes in a statute appear merely stylistic, that it's given the same effect that it had in the past. And to that point, 7.54 actually added election materials to the ballots, which could be opened in court. In conclusion, we request that this court remands the cause to the circuit with directions to proceed consistent with this court's opinion in this matter, which adopts the petitioner's construction of Wisconsin State Statute 7.54.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to take a look at 7.54. Earlier in your argument, you advanced that the style manual of the legislature supported your argument. But on page 24 of the opposing counsel's brief, it indicates that the comment in the styling manual you did not quote in full. And it states, in essence, if you want the or in 7.54 to be interpreted as a conjunctive, that is, and with and, in essence, that then you should phrase your statement like a, and I'm quoting, phrase your statement like a penalty provision, or both. And your opposing counsel then indicates that the legislature chose not to add or both, which confirms the or is exclusive. Can you respond to that additional language from the style manual, that the drafting manual, that you didn't reference?
I think so, Justice Bradley. First of all, we agree. The petitioners agree that or is disjunctive. The difference is it an exclusionary use of the or is it an inclusive use of the or? And we think it's inclusive. If I get coffee, I drink a lot of coffee, and ask, I'm asked if I'd like cream or sugar, that's an inclusionary use of or. If I'm asked, would I like one lump or two lumps, that's an exclusionary use of or. It's still disjunctive, and we have no issue with that. And in fact, the Wisconsin Drafting Manual makes it the default use of or that is inclusive, which is our position, unless it's obvious from the context that it's not inclusive.
Well, it states, just as I quoted, the Wisconsin Bill Drafting Manual states, quote, if you wish to allow one or both of two alternatives and the disjunctive is not clearly apparent from the context, phrase your statement like a penalty provision, parentheses, or both.
Your Honor, my time's run up. May I respond?
Yes.
I think we're saying the same thing, which is unless it's obvious from the context that the or being used is not inclusive, unless it's unclear from the context that the or being used is not inclusive, you don't need to add the or both if it's not unclear from the context that or is being used as inclusive, then you can leave it as it is, and that's the default under the Wisconsin Bill Drafting Manual.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Very interesting briefing and arguments. We appreciate all of you being here today. And we will meet at 5 after 11 in closed conference on this case. Thank you.